Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that acts as its own documentary, spotlighting the three of us as we both share our opinions and reveal, mostly, how we arrive at them. Documentaries are on the docket this week as we discuss a trio of films that, each in its own way, gives us a glimpse at how humans interact, both well and poorly. Not Going Quietly tells the story of lawyer Adie Barkin as he battles both for social change and against the ALS that is robbing him of his health. Homeroom follows a group of Oakland, California high school students as they navigate their senior year during traumatic 12 months of 2020. And finally, Woodstock 99, Peace, Love, and Rage focuses on the problematic 1999 music festival held on the 30th anniversary of the original Woodstock. Let's begin this week's show by looking at the life of a guy who refuses to go gentle into that good night. When you pronounce the letters ALS, you don't make any harsh, threatening sounds. But what the letters stand for, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, is about as threatening a health diagnosis as you could receive. And it's a diagnosis that lawyer and activist Adie Barkin received in 2016. But rather than passively accept his fate, ALS being an incurable condition that leads progressively to paralysis and eventual death, Barkin decided to spend whatever time he had left fighting for better health care for all Americans. Not Going Quietly, which was directed by Nicholas Bruckman, tells Barkin's story, documenting how, even as his health failed, he embarked with a crew of fellow activists on a 40-day nationwide campaign to confront conservative congressional representatives about their voting records. It might have proven educational had any of those representatives been willing to state their positions on camera, but for one reason or another, that didn't happen. What we are left then is the study of one man, not unlike Steve Gleason, the Spokane native and former New Orleans Saint, fighting as if his life depends on it, which, of course, it does.
As you can imagine, I was attracted to this particular film because it does involve a lawyer activist who had been fighting for various social justice causes, especially economic justice, prior to his receiving this devastating diagnosis. And I was also interested in this film because Dan did not say in his introduction that his younger brother, who lived here in Spokane, and we were primary caretakers for him because he had other disabilities, was diagnosed with and died of ALS. And his path was definitely different from what we see in this particular film, because I think he received the diagnosis and then was died within 10 days. And so his brother Randy's experience points out the difficulty of diagnosing ALS. And that was one thing in this particular film. I'm not sure it needed to dwell on that, but we just sort of are thrust into the experience of living with ALS without the sort of lead up that we've seen maybe in other contexts to how did he start to notice that he was having difficulties with any aspect of his daily living activities and so forth. And so we're just sort of immersed in his experience post-diagnosis as his health is declining. But we do see him in different contexts. Most important, the connections that he makes with other activists who are working on healthcare reform or avoiding any backsliding from the Affordable Care Act that they feel is inevitable as a result of the Trump administration's taking over. I think this film did a lot of things really well, Not Going Quietly. And I think that it maybe presented a couple of missed opportunities. So I mentioned one about not maybe telling us more about his initial path. I also felt as though he and his wife had been together since college, and now they're both young professionals. She's a professor at UC Santa Barbara. He was doing this lawyering activist work. They have this personal and professional relationship. And I guess I wish there had been just a little bit more about her. So you contrast this with the Steve Gleason documentary, where we did get more of a sense of the struggles that these people went through as a couple. And the wife at various points, Steve Gleason's wife, was saying some of the challenges. And we didn't, this was almost a little bit too rosy in some ways. I mean, he has round the clock caretakers now, but his best friend, I think, was his primary caretaker. And we see a little bit of some of the struggles with showering and so forth and so on. But it is a more upbeat portrayal of the ALS part of it. I think it's a good example of the fact that people who are doing this work for change, these folks really get the fact that it is all about power and the power dynamics. And I really liked some of the sort of secondary characters who were working on this campaign with him and the trainings that they were doing and so forth, because I just felt as though that aspect of the film maybe was not more developed, but I think it gave us a better picture, behind the scenes look at some of those challenges than maybe the health aspect part of this did.
Yeah, I mean, going back to what you were talking about in regards to this film not going quietly, not touching on certain aspects of his life. I mean, throughout the movie, they keep talking about his wife, Rachel King, and about what a brilliant mind she has. And then she never really gets to express herself, like you said. And I also thought that that would have made the movie stronger. Of course, I'm thinking about Gleason, the documentary, all the way through this. And I agree with you that it is a better film and a much more harrowing film. I don't know if this movie necessarily needed to be harrowing, if that's not the kind of story that the filmmaker wanted to tell, or that the Barkin family was willing to share. You know, we don't really know how all of that goes. But I think there are moments of really moving vulnerability throughout this movie. But it's always tough to review a doc like this, because as a movie, it's totally unremarkable in what it's doing, you know, stylistically. It's a very straightforward nonfiction narrative, and there are talking heads interspersed throughout, and it's very chronological. But at the end of it, you know, you feel inspired because it's a movie about an inspiring person. And you think, well, maybe I need to live my life a little more like people like A.D. Barkin, because they're actually making a difference in the world. And so even though the movie itself is like, it's something that you could show to a classroom, essentially, like a high school class might get a lot out of this movie. As a film, it's not a really a great work of art, but still, like, I walked away thinking, you know, this is one of the good humans that we have on this planet. And people like that deserve portraits such as this. I also think that there's not enough about his life before he became an activist and before he became a lawyer. I don't really feel like I know him all that well outside of his activism, but still, the guy's incredible, and there's no denying that.
Yeah, let's make it clear that there are certain parts of Not Going Quietly that if you aren't moved by it, then you have a heart of stone.
Correct.
Some of it is just absolutely mind-blowing. The movie is structured so that it's always a battle, but it's a battle that he wins part way. And so it's set up. I mean, he loses the big battle. He fights against the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. That doesn't work. There are other problems too. I wish it had been more like the movie Enemies of the State, which we'll review in another show, which had the opposite side making their own case so that we get a better view of both sides rather than simply one point of view. But that's not what this movie was about. I mean, it's what I wanted it to be about, but it's not what it was about. Taking it for what it is, you're both absolutely right. Moments of extremely touching stuff. And how can you not admire this guy for, you know, spending the last few months, years of his life struggling for social activism?
Yeah, I mean, we do see him at least at one point, the couple connects up with another couple going through the same experience. And I liked that when they were talking about what had happened. Also, we didn't mention the fact that there are a number of really poignant scenes involving his son. And you know, so how do you parent when your circumstances have changed? And how do you explain to the child sort of what's going on too? And this child seemed pretty astute, but that was, I thought, an intriguing aspect of this that we don't always or often see in these contexts.
Yeah, the kid was also, that's an understatement considering both his parents, how bright they are.
Right. Well, I also liked the glimpse that this film gave us into the actual process of activism. We watch Andy Barkin and the people that are around him and have, you know, they're sort of like an army unto themselves, an army of activists.
Be a hero campaign.
Yeah, right. We watch them as they go through this training about how you approach politicians whose views you want to challenge and how you talk to them and how you make sure you hold them accountable and don't let them just walk away. And watching that training, I thought, I didn't even know that this was a thing that people did, that this is something that you actually, you know, study and learn. But I thought that was really interesting. Yeah. And I also want to say, I just looked it up. If people haven't seen Gleason, the documentary, which of course has Spokane ties, you absolutely should. And I just looked it up. It's streaming on Amazon Prime. It's for rent in a couple other places. I think that's the movie to see first and then see this one, Not Going Quietly, which is at the Magic Lantern right now. And I'm sure we'll be streaming elsewhere very soon.
Yes. And that was our discussion of Not Going Quietly. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Homeroom and Woodstock 99, Peace, Love, and Rage. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Our SPR thank you contract. The party of the first part hereby grants to the party of the second part appreciative sentiments hereafter referred to as thanks. Spokane Public Radio thanks you for your support and encouragement. Working together, we all make SPR's community public radio happen.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbender, and I discussed Not Going Quietly. Let's now move to a couple of other documentaries, Homeroom and Woodstock 99, Peace, Love, and Rage. Let's begin with a look at the experience of a group of Oakland, California high school students as they negotiate their troubled senior year. While not the first film exploring high school life, the Hulu documentary Homeroom, directed by Peter Nix, does offer something unique, a look at the events involving the 2020 senior class of California's Oakland High School as the students attempt to get their local school board both to remove police officers from the school grounds and then are forced to weather the opening months of the COVID-19 forced shutdown. Nix, who suffered the loss of his own daughter during the film, which he ultimately dedicated to her, manages to capture the school year with his camera feeling like the proverbial fly on the wall. We experience the lives of a select few students as they face off with the school board, as they sit in class and sometimes listen to their teachers, but more often pay attention to their phones, and as they prepare for what will be their virtual graduation and for their respective lives beyond. The best documentaries take us into worlds that we might not otherwise witness. Homeroom is hardly the best documentary ever made, but it does rank among the best studies of high school that I, for one, have ever seen.
Yeah, and this is closer to a Verite-style documentary, similar to something that Frederick Wiseman might made. And Frederick Wiseman himself made a documentary called High School back in the 60s or 70s that I believe is similar in style to this. And Peter Nix, the director, also made a film that I saw at a festival several years ago called The Force, which was about the Oakland Police Department and sort of how they're reacting to nationwide protests against police brutality. And it had a similar sort of fly on the wall perspective. And I think that's also a really interesting film about how institutions run from the inside and how power dynamics work within those institutions. And I think this movie, Homeroom, is about those same things, even though it's about a bunch of teenagers. And it's going to be fascinating how things that are being made right now about right now are going to play a decade and a half, two decades down the road, because this is a snapshot of our moment right now. I mean, it begins in 2019, the school year of 2019, and ends just, it feels like a few weeks ago, so recently. And so it's kind of fascinating to watch current history playing out in a film like this. And even though I was a high school student more recently than either of you, the high school that's depicted in Homeroom, it feels like a totally different universe than the one that I was in. I mean, just the idea that these kids are constantly on their phones and constantly filming each other and documenting their daily lives is an anthropological
point of study. You did some of that teenage filming. I remember that.
Oh, I used to bring my my DV video camera to school and like film people on the bus and stuff. But if I had had a camera phone, I would have been filming stuff constantly. I can tell you that.
If you'd have been doing that when I went to high school, you'd have gotten your, you'd have gotten pushed around a little bit. You'd have been bullied.
Well, and it's also, I mean, just the fact, like the kids in this movie are, I mean, we talked about brilliant people in the last documentary, the kids in this movie, I mean, they are so with it and they're so smart.
So sophisticated.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, so it's also great to see. I mean, I haven't touched on a lot of the issues that the movie's bringing up and the issues that these kids are fighting back against and, you know, trying to raise awareness for, but it made me feel like maybe the future is in good hands. It sort of reminded me of, remember that documentary we reviewed either earlier this year or last year that was called Boys State?
Yes.
It has a similar vibe to that, but it's slightly more hopeful, even though the material within the documentary can get pretty dark and heavy at times.
I'm happy that you brought up Boys State because it is a nice contrast, I think, to this film on a number of levels. And so what this doc does, Homeroom, it doesn't focus so much on the individual characters. So we meet students, and there's one fellow, of course, who's maybe becomes more the focal point, but it really is more of an ensemble production. And so unlike a lot of these other, whether it's Spelling Bee or Boys State, where we get to know these individual people, that doesn't happen here. But watching these kids transform during COVID times, which totally upended their world, and everything that was happening with respect to the George Floyd protests and how it affects them individually, I thought was really handled well.
Yeah. And that was Homeroom. Let's close with Woodstock 99, Peace, Love, and Rage. If the HBO Max documentary feature Woodstock 99, Peace, Love, and Rage makes any point at all, and as directed by Garrett Price, the film tries to make several, it's that the original Woodstock Music Festival wasn't the 3 days of peace and love that its promoters promised. Of course, anyone who looks closely at the footage of Michael Wadley's 1970 film knows that much of it was a spectacularly muddy mess. Even so, that groundbreaking event was tame compared to the raucous, rage-fueled festival that was held 30 years later in upstate New York and dubbed Woodstock 99. It's hard to see how it could have been otherwise, what with some 400 attendees stuck on the concrete runways of a former military airfield in 100-degree temperature, sludging through and around what became feces-filled puddles while watching a lineup of groups such as Korn, Metallica, Kid Rock, and Limp Bizkit. Add in water being sold for the same price as beer at $4 a bottle, drugs in abundance, and women showing their breasts to the delight of testosterone-fueled frat boys. Well, yeah, forget peace, forget love. What you get mostly is rage. Price captures it all, blending it with talking head commentary by those who were there, sponsors, journalists, musicians, and attendees. What's missing for the most part is the music. But then, given the groups listed above, that's probably just as well.
I want to correct you on one thing, Dan, because you misspoke and said there were 400 attendees when there were actually 400,000 attendees. Slightly different. And so if that doesn't communicate the scope of this festival, nothing will. And the fact that there were two stages that were like a mile apart on foot and it was just on hot concrete. Also, I was thinking, you know, $4 for a beer at a music festival is actually like a pretty good deal nowadays. So like now they're like $14. I think this movie, it's fascinating as a document of this specific event and what a disaster it must have looked like a disaster on paper. And yet they forged ahead anyway, because they'd had success before. The movie itself is a little bit hypocritical, I think, because you're right. It begins by saying everyone remembers Woodstock was, you know, flower power and love, and it wasn't that way. But then some of the talking heads keep referring to like, oh, if only this had been Woodstock 69. And it's like, well, which is it? And then they keep talking about how there was all this nudity and also some horrific sexual assaults that happened at this event. And yet the movie itself is filled with shots of like bare-breasted women. And I'm like,
I know,
you can't.
It's a real contradictory presentation. And, yes. And they're almost like, so it's sort of like making fun of the baby boomers for Woodstock 69. And then it's looking at the Gen X millennials about, oh, we had this festival and well, that was horrific. And yeah. Then they come around to the fact, well, after Me Too and so forth, we're not going to have any of these events again. And they talk about Coachella yeah. and how great it was. Well, yeah, it was great at raising money, but there are a plethora of stories of women who've been sexually assaulted at every festival, including those. So it was, it had a really strange vibe.
Also, let's not forget the fact that these bands that the movie both does and doesn't blame the bands for inciting more violence. And I think you could argue both sides.
Well, it certainly blames Fred Durst.
Well, let's not forget, though, that Fred Durst and Limp Bizkit, who I also think is a terrible band, so I don't want to defend them too much, but let's not forget that they had played hundreds of shows to giant crowds of mostly angry white dudes, and this kind of violence didn't ensue. So I think there are a lot, the people that put this festival on are more to blame than even they are willing to.
Totally agree.
Because they,
totally
they agree. Pass the blame a lot, and I'm sorry, it's all on
even
them.
The people and, they hired to keep security. Right. I mean, that was
there wasn't any security.
Right. And one of the promoters, John Scheer, he spends the entire movie trying to say, it was all MTV's fault. It was all Kurt Loder's fault. Oh, please.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's also the fault of the people that were perpetrating the violence, too. So let's not
get that. Correct. Yeah. I would not put this on anyone's must-see list for any reason, quite frankly.
There's no music for one thing, right?
I think in the case of these bands, that's probably a good thing.
That's right. And we were talking about Woodstock 99, Peace, Love, and Rage. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Not Going Quietly and Homeroom. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarbert for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, where we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from the late actor Philip Seymour Hoffman. Films are always a fiction, not documentary. Even a documentary is a kind of fiction. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.